all I remember. Our guest, Mr. Jackson McKay, the DDG from Home Affairs, dealing with Immigration Services. Dr. Victor Tarache, DDG of Tourism. You are welcome. We are happy that we have succeeded to be here and to be here on time. Let us apologize for being a little late. Sometimes we use public transport as MPs from villages, and we doesn't arrive exactly at 9 o'clock. These are the problems we are having, which we hope we are going to improve as time goes on. But before we have your presentations, let me thank both of you, the Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Tourism, for recognizing the working together, the principle of working together in order to optimize our delivery for our nation. I think we've got to thank you for that, because sometimes we find that in government departments there is rivalry or competition that is destructive to delivery of government services. Once more, thank you very much for that. So we are here on the shortest day of the year, so we expect the shortest delivery of presentations as well. So, and then our inputs will be short, and then we shall, but equally effective. And as we look at the tensions between the need to have security as a country and the need to facilitate tourism in the country by one department, which sometimes may not be that easy, because it is not easy to differentiate genuine tourists and then people that may be having other motives as to commit crime and other misdemeanors in the country. And therefore, it is quite a tough job, but we hope that we together will be in a position to improve the situation in the country. As we work towards being the greatest country we can be as South Africans, we depend on you as our senior administrative officers on the ground. Over to you, Mr. Jackson McKay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Just two apologies, please, Your Excellencies. Our Director General was supposed to have been in this meeting as well, but we have two other engagements today at the same time. We have to present our progress report to our portfolio committee the same time this morning, and also we have to present our budget, our vote in the NCOP, the policy debate on our budget vote in the NCOP this morning. And then there was this as well. So what the DG did was he parceled out some of the because we already postponed the last one, we couldn't postpone this one again, and he parceled it out to me to come and do the presentation. The second apology, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is I'm sorry for the late submission of the presentation. It was only cleared last night by our executive at about 6 o'clock last night, and I couldn't get it to the Honorable Members before then, so my apologies for that. Honorable Chairperson, my presentation that I'm going to make is a presentation on on immigration services in the Department of Home Affairs and how we manage immigration, precisely to have that balance, Honorable Chairperson, that you said, between national security imperatives and also the economic imperatives of the country and how we balance that. And we have devised what we call a risk-based methodology that assists us, I think, to have to balance those two imperatives. And it will become clear as I give my presentation. And also, Chairperson, in the run-up to this presentation, we have been having a series of meetings with the Department of Tourism, where we sat together and looked at what their priorities are and see from an immigration point of view how we could work together to make them realize those priorities that they have. And it is based, Chairperson, on the State of the Nation address. If you could move the slide. Addressed by our President, President Zuma, in his State of the Nation address, where he says that to further boost our tourism potential, we will, amongst other measures, look into flexible visa requirements, improved landing slots at foreign airports, as well as improved tourism infrastructure. He continues to say that linked to tourism, we will continue to develop the cultural industry sector, which contributes about 2 billion rand to the gross domestic product. Our role in here, honorable members, is then to look at how we can make our visa requirements more flexible so that we would have more visitors into the country, which would boost our tourism sector. The mandate of the immigration, South African Immigration Services, which is run by the Department of Home Affairs, is to manage immigration and market South Africa as a destination for work and study and to help create a highly skilled South African workforce. Secondly, it is to maintain the security of South Africa's ports of entry and issue visas and permits to persons coming to South Africa to live, work, study, or coming for holiday purposes. And it also manages the asylum seeker process and the granting of refugee status. It also enforces immigration legislation and provides immigration policy advice. Honorable Chair, a cornerstone for the effective management of immigration is to ensure that necessary controls are instituted, providing maximum gains with minimal risk to the Republic of South Africa and its citizens. To this end, the Department of Home Affairs has recognized the criticalness of positioning its immigration functions at a level where policy, technology, and early warning systems can effectively manage the movement of travelers through its designated borders and ports of entry. The Southern African migratory movement introduces the phenomena of illegal border crossings, human smuggling, and a high demand for counterfeit documentation, providing status and a critical means of accessing employment opportunities, schooling, and other social welfare benefits. The business of obtaining such documents introduces scope for unscrupulous departmental officials to use their access and status to elicit bribes and engage in corrupt practices. Such manifestation presents a high-level risk to the integrity of enabling documentation and the reputation that South Africa's passports and travel documents contain the required levels of security features and controls. A risk methodology for the department's immigration is therefore structured towards an enabling extension of border control, catering for peripheral influence beyond the designated borderline, and using extended programs where systems provide an early warning and preemptive immigration management. An approach such as this, honorable members, implies that the department needs to assess internal measures, such as incorporated databases between civic affairs and immigration services, whilst also extending the control of his borders as wide as possible, even far beyond the borderline of the Republic, by using advanced technology and placing officials in key positions within international strategic travel hubs. An end-to-end immigration business process incorporating e-border solutions, trusted traveler programs, and biometric technology would enable immigration services to conduct risk profiling on its clients. And this process is supported by a series of immigration checks on travelers occurring prior to arrival in the Republic. The integration of an e-border technology with existing immigration systems introduces a verification mechanism assisting immigration officials to establish the authenticity of a traveler's identity. And, Chairperson, this brings us to our methodology that actually we utilize to manage immigration within South Africa, which was proven really during the 2010 World Cup when we brought all the elements together to assist us in managing that. And with this approach, Chairperson, we actually are able to minimize the risk to the country and maximize benefit to the country. The key methodology for managing immigration risks is to build a complete history of the visits of all those who visit South Africa and link this to effective screening of visitors to South Africa even before they leave their country of origin. The frequency of travel may have a determined impact on the extent to which the level of risk is applied. The purpose of adhering to a risk methodology is to ensure that persons traveling to the country can be profiled well in advance, testing the credibility of travel documentation, personal identity, and running background checks on the possible listings against national or international stop lists. A risk-based methodology is thus underpinned by a seamless interface of technology, reporting systems, and proactive management by immigration services. And South Africa's immigration management system is based on a number of interventions and systems. The first is the requirement that all non-South Africans from visa-exempt countries are required to have a visa or permit to enter and sojourn in the Republic of South Africa, which is managed by our permitting application center. Chairperson, we have this diagram that I would like to show honorable members. It is what we call our onion ring approach to immigration management, which extends the borders of South Africa and starts in the country of origin of the respective visitor, and is best, like I said, illustrated by this diagram that we have, where the outer layers being the country of origin, or what we call offshore. So in the past, what happened was we would only know about visitors coming to South Africa when they reach our ports of entry. Currently, with the systems that we have extended the borders to the port of embarkation to South Africa. There are two types of visitors coming to South Africa. There are those that require visa, and there are those that are visa exempt. Our risk-based methodology also assists us in waiving visas for certain nationals and also stating which nationals would require visas to visit South Africa based on national security considerations. So when we have a look at this chairperson with this green, it is greenish, I think, outer level over there, that would be in the country of origin, or what we call offshore. And the red line would indicate their movement towards South Africa. So I will start at the outer ring in the country of origin. Which starts in your country of embarkation. South Africa regulates the entry of foreign visitors. Foreigners are required to apply for permission from the South African government to enter or visit South Africa. They are obliged to state their purpose of visit and their intended period of stay in South Africa. This is done through a visa and a permit application regime, which adjudicates applications and issues the necessary visas or permits to prospective visitors to South Africa. It should be noted that not all visitors to South Africa require visas to enter South Africa. So the first port of call, then, if you are in your country of origin, would be to visit one of South Africa's missions where people would apply for a visa to visit South Africa. That would be the first port of call for those requiring visas. And when they do get to these embassies, we then check the authenticity of their document, we verify their credentials, and we also ascertain the purpose of visiting South Africa. And should they qualify for visas, these visas are then issued to them, and the turnaround time for issuing tourist visas are 5 days. And for people to be issued with a visa to, if they qualify to visit South Africa. The South African government waives the requirement for visas for nationals from certain countries, and they are allowed to enter South Africa without visa. The basis for which a visa requirement is waived is based on the risk that such travelers could pose to the national security of South Africa. Countries which are granted visa waivers are normally those whose nationals pose a low risk to the national security of South Africa. The analysis of migration trends of countries enables immigration services to risk rate and profile countries in terms of illegal and legal migration trends. Collaboration with other security agencies in doing this profiling is essential. When they do apply to our missions, they make use of what we call the permit application system. And this is a risk-based screening by foreign missions, which constitutes the first of the outer circles or rings. Screening involves the effective linking of the movement control and the permitting system. Nationals from countries requiring visas and permits to enter and live in South Africa need to apply for such permits at South African missions in the country of origin. Now, if I could just talk to the movement control system. The movement control system is a system that electronically checks against databases to verify the authenticity of a traveler's documents as well as his purpose of visiting South Africa. So this movement control system reads against most databases, databases of lost and stolen passports, the database of all of those prohibited to enter South Africa, the database of our security agencies, the Interpol database. So all of these databases, should you appear on any of them, the movement control system would flag you and it would say that you are an undesirable and you are not allowed to visit or enter South Africa. So this is done in the background, electronically, and is not obtrusive at all or intrusive at all in terms of the passenger. Slide 19. Okay, I'm sorry, Chairperson. I just need to go back to you. Yeah. Okay. This allows officials to do adequate screening of potential visitors in their home country, where they are able to consult local databases, local security agencies, and local business associations or chambers of commerce, local educational institutions to check on the veracity of documentation required for such applications as well as to ascertain the bona fides of potential visitors to South Africa. This becomes very difficult when people apply for documentation in South Africa, because you are not able to verify against the institutions in home country. And it makes it much more difficult. When applications are done in country of origin, it is easier for our officials to do this screening of potential visitors in South Africa. An analysis on the susceptibility of our permits to abuse by migrants intending to come to South Africa is conducted so as to determine the level of verification and screening that needs to be done by permitting staff. We also have, Honorable Chairperson members, those people requiring visas to enter South Africa. The first time we will get to know of them and where we are able to check their bona fides is at our foreign missions when they apply for visas, as I have explained. And by doing that check, we are able to do risk management to make sure that we only have bona fide travelers receiving visas coming into South Africa. Those that do not require visas, we will not know of them until in the past when they arrive at our port of entry, let us say at OR Tambo Airport. With the system that we have in place now, which is called our Advanced Passenger Profiling System, this system enables immigration services to screen all potential travelers, both visa required and visa exempt, upon check-in at the port of departure to South Africa. So when they come to at the check-in counter and they hand in their passports, and their passports are read by the check-in system, that information immediately reads against our advanced passenger profiling system that has the same risk engine as the movement control system, which reads against all of those databases that I have mentioned, the lost and found passports, the Interpol database, the list of undesirables or prohibited persons in South Africa. The APP system thus allows an airline and sea vessel to electronically verify a passenger's authority to travel and to enter South Africa. The processing takes place as a real-time interactive transaction during check-in. This enables immigration services to check the databases of passports, visas, alerts, and according to government-dictated business rules, deny or allow boarding of such passengers to South Africa, This process happens discreetly in the background without any inconvenience to the passenger. The system is also linked to Interpol and lists generated domestically by the Department of Home Affairs, SARS, and the South African Police Services, and the other security agencies in South Africa. By pre-screening passengers prior to arrival or departure, immigration services can identify those passengers who present a higher risk. Immigration, customs, police, and security agencies can then focus available resources on these higher risk passengers whilst facilitating smoother and quicker processing for those passengers who are identified as low risk, thereby improving security and reducing criminality at our airports of entry, specifically as well in terms of the turnaround time that it takes for persons to be processed at our port of entry. Using APP, Immigration Services is able to receive biographical data on each passenger as they check in. This data is then matched against watch list and enforcement and inadmissibility databases in real time, and respond back to the conveyance authorizing or denying boarding for each passenger. So the conveyancer would then receive a message which says, do not board or okay to board. Where it says do not board, the conveyancer will then call our operational center back in South Africa, and the operational center in South Africa would have a look at the reason for why they are refused entry by the system, and if it is, and a decision would then be taken in that, depending on what type of stop has been put on the system, would be able to advise the airline whether they should board the passenger or not. This also applies to departing flights, and it provides a mechanism to prevent the departure of a suspect passenger, even in the case where there is limited or no document control at the port. Wanted criminals could thus be prevented from leaving the country and intercepted at the port of departure. Once a passenger is cleared for travel by the ATP system, Once a passenger is cleared for travel by the APP system, it will then generate an expected movement record for that passenger and signals to South African Immigration Services, Customs and Security Agencies the pending arrival of that person on a particular international flight or ship. If I could just explain, this system is not only linked to Immigration Services. The police have sight of everyone coming into the country, SARS as well. So it is an interdepartmental system which services all the other security departments of the JCPS cluster departments. This enables officials more time to perform risk assessments and use alternative sources of information to target high-risk passengers prior to their arrival in South Africa. We also have what we call airline liaison officers. Honorable members, the airline liaison officers we utilized during the World Cup, and we will continue to utilize them where the need arises, but currently we are not utilizing them because of the cost factor. It is quite costly to deploy them to foreign countries, but where there is a need, we would deploy them. These airline liaison officers, now if I could just explain, again, maybe go through the process. The first time we meet you is at our mission, and we clear you there, you are free to enter. Those that don't require any visa, the first time we will get to know of you is when you come and check in at the airport. And on checking, we would be able to risk rate you according to our risk engine. Now, should you go through that process, before you board the flight, we have what we call airline liaison officers. And these, in terms of the risk model, these ALOs are placed at key strategic international hubs of flights coming into South Africa. For instance, during the World Cup, we placed them in Schiphol Airport, Heathrow Airport, Hong Kong Airport. We place them in Nairobi Airport. We place them in Nigeria, in Lagos. We place them in Mumbai and in Dubai. Those were the seven ports coming into South Africa. And it was really effective in that we were able to stop a high number of people trying to get into the country using false documents. So what people would do is they would check in, for instance, with a particular document. But when they board the flight, they do not use that same document to board the flight. So you would find that when they try to board the flight, they either have another passport that in another name that they are going to use to board the flight, or another nationality, a passport of a different nationality that they use to board the flight. Or sometimes people with an intention of coming into the country to claim asylum tear up their documents and use other documents to get onto the flight. So by having airline liaison officers, we were able to pick up all of these anomalies where people were trying to get onto the flight using other false documents. Actually, what they do is they are critical in detecting and combating human smuggling and trafficking at these ports of entry, or people trying to get people into into South Africa. The concept of screening, preemptive immigration management, and advanced levels of risk profiling on travelers should be viewed as an end-to-end business process which incorporates e-border solutions, trusted traveler program, and biometric technology. The process is supported by a series of immigration checks on occurring prior to arrival in the Republic of South Africa. We can return to this slide. So all of that, honorable members, honorable chairperson, happens in the country of origin, as we say, offshore. Now, should someone board a flight, in SADC, I think the shortest flight is a 4-3 hour flight to South Africa. If there are people of interest on that flight, we are still able to, because we now have all the data of all passengers that are flying into South Africa. And it gives the security agencies time to do risk assessment on them so that it will inform them which of these passengers they need to stop, which ones they need to send for secondary checks at the airport. Upon arrival, the new movement control system is designed and developed to enhance security at the ports of entry and to provide for real-time passenger verification and processing of movement. The system uses a passport scanning technology that allows for the scanning and capturing of the traveler's information, including their photos, which further introduces possibilities for data mining and business intelligence. The movement control system has a risk engine that is linked to the permitting application system. Interpol's risk of stolen and fraudulent passports, immigration, police, and other security agencies watch list. And any traveler that appears on such a list is considered as high risk and will not be allowed entry into South Africa unless so authorized by the relevant agencies on whose list he or she appears. This system is central to the immigration function and records all movements into and out of the country, as well as all permits and visa applications done and issued by the South African Immigration Service. It contains the entire footprint of visitors and sojourners to the Republic of South Africa from first-time application for a relevant visa to enter South Africa, an immigration permit issued to such a person, and any change in immigration status of such a person and the departure of such a person from South Africa. So it gives you a complete footprint of coming into the country, sojourning in the country, and your departure from South Africa. We also have a fraud detection unit. And this fraud detection unit, a particular challenge is the management of undocumented foreigners as a manifestation of illegal migration being inherently tied to document fraud and identity theft. Inspected officials have been trained as specialists in detecting fraudulent travel documents and assist in the establishment and assist in the document fraud units at our major ports of entry. Particular focus is placed on the authenticity of valuable documents such as passports, identity documents, birth certificates, educational, and marriage certificates. And finally, Chairperson, what happens at our ports of entry? We also do what we call elicitation. When a passenger presents him or herself to an immigration officer, the officer then elicits information from the passenger, which would satisfy the officer that the passenger or visitor is a bona fide visitor to the Republic of South Africa. The officer elicits responses from the passengers to queries on purpose of visit, where they will be staying, the duration of their stay, and so on. And if an unsatisfactory response is received, such a visitor would then be referred to secondary screening for further investigation. That chairperson event, what happens when you arrive in South Africa and the checks that are done at the port of entry. You will then go to the immigration law enforcement.
Yep.
After admission, what happens then? Now, a risk-based immigration management approach has to be underpinned by well-articulated countermeasures that preserve all control measures contained within an immigration policy. To this end, the department has adopted a comprehensive law enforcement strategy that emphasizes the role of immigration through the enforcement of controls instituted to monitor travelers who transgress immigration. No, it's not a chairperson. I think the Clifford, I have not briefed him on how to go in and out of the presentation. My apologies for that, honorable member. To assist the inspectors with such control functions, a case management tool has been developed, which provides a direct link between the inspectorate in the provinces and the head office. And information on investigations conducted nationally is centralized and analyzed at our head office. The case management system also allows for the activities of all inspected officials to be monitored and to record the arrests, investigations, and deportations by all officials within the inspectorate branch. Overstaying and illegally staying in the country not only embodies a disregard for immigration laws, but also embodies a drain on public funds and social services. Consequently, immigration countermeasures include monitoring of a visitor's whereabouts within South Africa through the services of a tracing unit, which functions in close cooperation with our missions abroad, receiving information on applicants receiving visas or temporary residence permits. Chairperson, I will now go to an issue that I think the Portfolio Committee on Tourism would have an interest in. That would be our introduction of a transit visa for visa required nationals that transit through South Africa. Chairperson, we have, if we could have a look at this map of trends that I have over here. We have picked up some trends in the past. People fly in to South Africa, and normally they would require visas. And at the point, as I have explained in terms of our risk-based methodology, we would normally find out the authenticity or the bona fide of the traveler and refuse visa. But what has happened, or what happened was, nationals requiring visas would then say, no, we are not flying into South Africa, we are transiting through South Africa. So they would fly into OR Tambo and our other international airport, and they would then get a link, they would then say, no, I'm en route to Mozambique, to Maputo, or I am en route to Maseru. What then happens is, when they get to Maseru, they then come through the land borders, either through the holding fence or by acquiring Basutu documentation or by acquiring Mozambican documentation or other documentation from our surrounding countries. They then come into South Africa with that documentation. And we had a lot, and some of them would land at OR Tambo, and some of our unscrupulous and corrupt officials would then assist them to enter the country. And these are mainly from countries, Bangladesh, China, Pakistan, India, and some Nigerians coming into the country. So they would fly in and say, no, we're not coming into your country at all, so we don't know about them. Only when they then find their way into the country, suddenly they pop up and claim asylum at our refugee reception centers. The department then introduced the transit visa because of this. So, Chairperson, if I could just talk to understanding international migration trends as well, because it links to this. In essence, the management of immigration forms a basis for risk assessment and embraces the following concepts: managing risk by adequately screening foreign nationals who enter South Africa and making appropriate decisions, and managing risk by ensuring that the movement of non-citizens is adequately known and tracked within and across our country's borders. Now, if we introduce, Chairperson, a transit visa. And the transit visa applies to all nationals who would normally require a visa to enter South Africa. So a transit visa is required by a foreigner who is subject to visa requirements when such a foreigner travels from a place outside the Republic of South Africa through the Republic of South Africa to any of our neighboring countries. As in the case of visitors' visas, transit visas are also processed within 5 working days. So what this has helped us to do now is that anyone coming into South Africa, requiring a visa, even transiting through South Africa to our neighboring countries, now requires a visa to enter South Africa. We have seen a complete change in the patterns and the trends after we introduce requirements, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. What they do now is they do not fly into South Africa. And I'm sure if you have a look at your statistics, you will see a drop in some of these destinations of people coming into South Africa. What they do now is they fly to Nairobi. When they get to Nairobi, they take a bus or they walk down or they take a boat down into Mozambique. And when they get to Mozambique, they cross in the hole in the fence into South Africa. Or they land at Nairobi and then they fly from Nairobi to Mavalan Airport in Maputo. And they are then assisted there by corrupt officials as well into the country. And when they are in the country, they then come through the hole in the fence. Through the hole in the fence. We have no track of them because they have not applied for any visa at our missions abroad, so we don't know of them at all. So we have seen that the transit visa has had the desired effect of moving, of changing this pattern that we have seen. And it has really been a disincentive for a lot of people that would have normally just flown into South Africa and walked into South Africa from our neighboring country. Chairperson, I think this will also be of interest to the portfolio committee. I have here a list of countries which are exempt from visa requirements. And in our discussion with the Department of Tourism, most of the countries that they view as their critical countries and their biggest markets, as you can see, are visa exempt. The UK and Northern Ireland, for instance, the USA, most of the European countries, if not all, most of the SADC countries, with the exception of Angola and the DRC, and Madagascar those are the only SADC countries. The reason why Angola is not exempt is because Angola refuses to reciprocate. We have granted all our SADC countries a visa exemption, with the exception of two countries. That is Madagascar, because of the current problems, political problems in Madagascar, and secondly the DRC, because we are not sure who is from the DRC, because they do not have a national population register, and we do not know who they give their passports to. The other country, we have offered a visa exemption of 90 days per calendar year for the SADC protocol to Angola, and Angola has refused to reciprocate. And because they do not reciprocate, the reason they gave for non-reciprocation was that they are still considering it. They are also reviewing the immigration laws and systems, and once they have done that, they will look at it and to see if they can consider it. So that is the reason why they are not exempt. But most of the other countries are visa exempt. Chairperson, from a tourism point of view, Nigeria, India, and the People's Republic of China, as well as Angola, have been identified as of particular importance. However, due to security implications, South Africa has not entered into visa waiver engagements with these countries, except, as I said, with Angola. And the reason for this is simple. It is security consideration. From Nigeria, we have the threat from crime point of view, organized crime point of view. The countries like India, China, these are countries that are actually what we call they export their nationals, Honorable Chairperson. They have a stated policy. It's a policy that they actually send their nationals out to other countries for them to get work. I think it assists them firstly to get remittances back to their country, and secondly, they don't have all of those messes to look after in their country. So they have particular policies of saying our people need to go out and work in other countries, and it makes it then difficult for us to be able to have people traveling into our country that we are not sure whether they are going to return back to their country or not. And trends, immigration trends show now that the biggest culprit with regard to overstaying in our country are these countries that we have over here. It should be noted, though, honorable members, that although we have no visa waiver with Nigeria, China, India, and Angola, our missions in this country issue long-term, this is 2 to 3 year, multiple entry visas to frequent travelers from those countries to South Africa. So we have a database of business people that travel frequently to South Africa, of ordinary tourists and visitors that come to South Africa frequently, and those that are on those databases that have proven that they visit South Africa, stay the allotted time, and leave South Africa within that allotted time. They are on our frequent traveler list, and they are then granted these long-term multiple entry visas, which spread over 2 to 3, some even 4 years if you are a frequent traveler. And this decision has ensured that those wanting to visit the country frequently would not have to apply for a visa every time that they visit South Africa. Yes, Ghana is not here at all, Chairperson, but Ghana is also one of our high-risk countries. We are in the process now of talking to Ghana and negotiating at a binational level in terms of a visa waiver requirement for them. But Senegal, Ghana, serial overstayers in South Africa. Stay for a very long time, disregard for our immigration law. Honourable members, in order to ensure that visas are issued as expeditiously as possible, the Department of Home Affairs has appointed a business partner in China, India, and Nigeria. The front office processes have been outsourced. That is, the applications are made with the business partner who scrutinizes the completeness and accepts the application fee for them. The applications are then handed to the South African mission for processing and issuance of visas if the application was successful. Now, I do not know, honorable members, if you have, I'm sure if not most would have heard about the problems that Nigerians had in applying for visas in Nigeria. Firstly, our mission was not designed to take the number of applicants that they have. So you would get queues and queues of people forming outside to apply for visas. It would clog up the traffic. It would influence businesses around there. Same in our other, some of our missions are in office blocks. So you can imagine the congestion at our mission. And what we have then, and we also can't place, it's costly to place one person abroad. Costs us about R1 million for a person and the spouse. If children are involved, the cost even goes up. That's R1 million per financial year or more. So what we have then done is before we pay salaries, that is just the cost of keeping someone abroad, him and his family, and the stipends that they receive or allowances, sorry, that they receive whilst they are there. So with the business partner, firstly, we take the overcrowding at our missions are gone because they now go to the offices that are run by the business partner. And at these offices, this is where they queue, they give in their documents. These documents are couriered to our mission for adjudication. Once they are adjudicated, they are couriered back to our business partner. The business partner would call the people, tell them your document has arrived, please pick it up. They report to the business partner, pick up their documents there, and it has really, in terms of efficiency, it has assisted us a lot. Since having introduced the business partner, we don't have any more complaints about long queues or undue delays have been returned. Insofar as Angola is concerned, like I said, it is worth mentioning that South Africa has extended the visa waiver, but Angola was not prepared to reciprocate. Our business partner is currently busy exploring the Angolan environment in order to implement a similar front office outsourcing as in the case of Nigeria, India, and the People's Republic of China. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKay. I think he is ready. Okay, what we shall do is we shall break for tea, and then immediately thereafter we shall get a presentation from the Department of Tourism, and then engage the Department of Home Affairs after getting the full story, because right now we have got the full story. But to the Department of Home Affairs, I think there should be a clear articulation as to what exactly you have done to, as the President put it, look into flexible visa requirements. Just specific actions. You've done this and the other. For purposes of communication, because as you are communicating, you are dealing with safety, you are dealing with risk, you are dealing with everything. But specific actions that you have taken to deal with that problem. Please. Thanks.
You need me to respond now?
No, not now. Yeah, because that is the mandate. and then what specific actions have we taken in order to execute that mandate. Thank you.
Okay.
10 minutes break, and then we come back. We have had a presentation from the Department of Home Affairs, and now we shall have an input from Department of Tourism by the DDG, Dr. Karaf. Over to you, Dr.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We thought when we saw the program, we thought we that it should also be here, just to give a little bit of input in terms of the context where the demand seems to be growing and where perhaps the Home Affairs intervention would be required and where they are already probably doing some work in that context. We started by looking at where our core markets are, and we wanted firstly to just find out what is the current state of visa wavering or processing issues within those particular markets. Now, if we look at Africa, we've got Angola, Nigeria, and Kenya that would require. The rest of the other core markets would be, and Australasia would be India. Now, in terms of the dispensation that was mentioned by Home Affairs, India and Nigeria are already taken care of. Angola is still in the pipeline, and going forward, we'll be having discussions with regards to Kenya. We also looked at the investment market. We didn't look largely at the textile markets and the watch list market, but we looked also at the investment market. And within Africa, we've got DRC, which I will show some numbers just now, which will clearly indicate that there is significant demand. Obviously, under Australasia, under Asia, we've got China, which seems to be growing at a rapid rate, which we really need to catch up with as well. Now, if we look at this 2010 stats, just an indication of the tourists, but also an indication of that particular market, what is our share? If we look at Angola, Angolans don't travel much. We're talking about 263,000. Their population is higher than ours, but they don't travel as much. So if we look at that and we look at the other side of it, 14% of that is actually coming to South Africa. That is quite significant. But the most significant part of it will begin to show when we show the actual amount they spend. The numbers may not be that much, but the money they spend is huge. The Nigerians, it's a very significant number of people that are traveling. But also, if we were to look at Nigerians in general, there could be much more. I mean, Nigeria has got a lot of people. We're talking hundreds of millions of people. So if
it's about 200 million now.
Yeah, it's about 100, just around 150 million, yeah. Now, if we look at that, and we're looking at an outbound overall of about 740, it's still very small. But we're asking ourselves serious questions, and this does not necessarily, it's not necessarily for homicides per se, but questions such as, if we look at the USA, and we're getting only 200 something out of 63 million that travels out of the US. So there's more that also from our side we can do. But just also, I mean, if we look at the UK, much as these other visa issues, if you look at the fact that we have to apply for visas and so on, the numbers tell a different story. If we look at 453 people that are actually coming down here, and they actually spend significantly, that's a huge market, and we can't afford to lose that. So there are special dispensation, obviously, that as we discuss, we will be looking at what then becomes the impact, depending on whatever policy stance we will take. This is the money. Average spend, now we're going to have the figures end of June. We're going to have the figures for 2010 in terms of the spend. But look at Angola. Average spend of 21,000. That's a lot of money.
Per person.
Per person. Now, if we take that and we then have 38 plus thousand people coming here, and if we look at the column that deals specifically with overall total, we're looking at 820 million. It's a significant amount of money. This is still with the current arrangement where we still have three lift frequencies that are not yet activated. SAA is already full to capacity. So on the other side, PEG had some challenges technically, which led them to actually bring in smaller aircraft at some point. And those smaller aircraft led to loss of business class tickets up to four, I mean, per individual aircraft. When they were withdrawing the bigger capacity aircraft, they were losing up to almost 50 first and business class seats. So that is something to do with the brand itself, and as such, they want to pick up first and then start looking at whether we can activate those other ones. So what we're saying is that out of that 200 and something thousand people, there's still more that wants to come here, but there's these issues about airlift and so on, which we are working with the Department of Transport. If we look at Nigeria, the spend of 14,800, it actually puts it on number two. So the first one would be Angola, then Nigeria. Then the Indians also, when they come here, they actually spend. They're actually almost the same as the Nigerians. And these are the markets that have that special dispensation that Home Affairs was talking about. So it's markets that we really need to nurture very, very carefully and say, with this kind of money that is coming into the country, what do we do? So let's look at the UK, for instance. A total of 5 billion. That's a lot of money. So when we have got policy decisions around that, obviously we would look at what does it mean for the economy of the country ultimately. So that's what we wanted to show. The Chinese market, obviously, we still need to grow it. We're getting 0.1%. But in actual numbers, we if we look at the numbers for 2009, they were far much less than that. And the growth is quite significant. The Chinese growth has had nothing to do with the World Cup. It's a market that is growing on its own, and that is a market that we should try and make sure that. But I would like to also comment on the sense that if we look at some of the markets, significant markets, I mean, if you look at the numbers from Canada, there is this, you know, like Australia now is becoming a diaspora of some sort. Canada is also becoming a diaspora of some sort. There's almost a million South Africans that actually live there. These people actually travel to South Africa, and some of the numbers that we actually see are numbers that are coming from those people. And it's a question that we then look at and say, okay, these are markets that we really must nurture. Yeah, that's the spend. With the Chinese, if we look at that, that's 20.8. That's significant. Most of it is actually in gambling. But That's a significant amount of money.
Thank you very much for an interesting presentation. And then perhaps we can go on to questions. But firstly, perhaps if we look on the tourism industry, especially the hospitality sector, the restaurants, the hotels, and so forth, there is a high number of foreign workforce. Is it because of the permits that are issued by the Department of Home Affairs, or is it because they have fraudulent IDs, or are they allowed to work in South Africa? In fact, if you look at Cape Town, most of the restaurants are having foreign nationals working as waiters. And I'm not saying that they should be prohibited, but the numbers are a majority in Cape Town restaurants already. So this may start other problems, other social problems. Is it because of your work permits, or what exactly is happening? So.
Thank you very much. My questions are directed at Mr. McKay. We meet once again. In a previous life, we met at the Home Affairs Committee, so I'm very delighted to see you this morning because there's a number of issues that I would really like to take up with you. And those that I would not have time for today, because the chairperson will surely stop me at some point in time, I will follow up with parliamentary questions. You mentioned yourself the crime situation with regarding to Nigerians. And I would like to add to that Chinese and Pakistanis, without being xenophobic in any way whatsoever. It's just the situation in our country. You specifically mentioned the idea of organized crime. I'm very, very concerned. After the last parliamentary visit that you accompanied us on, when we, for homelessness and tourism were together, we visited several ports of entry. We visited Boat Bridge. Several points of entry in the city, and I must honestly tell you that I would very much like to go back there and see whether the situation regarding the security of our country has improved, because what we've seen there was horrifying, to say the least. I mean, you have a port of entry in the city, and then a kilometer down the road, there is no fences, and people are walking freely, and animals are grazing freely in our country. I mean, when the grazing is done for the day and the work's done for the day, they simply walk back to the city and no one is doing anything about it. That's a problem. You also mentioned human trafficking. I wanted to add another dimension to the human trafficking, organ trafficking. I recently read a very disturbing report about someone at Boat Bridge traveling with a head on their lap and not being stopped. This is absolutely horrific and disgusting. Specifically at that point of
entry. Did you verify that?
I read the article. I'm asking a question now, because it was said in the article that just as we've got a major problem, we must look. There's a reason why Jan van Riebeeck came here in 1652, because of where we're situated. There's a good reason for that, because of our where we are in South Africa. We are a very, very ideal place to take people from or to bring people in, either by land or by air. So, I mean, that's a fact. So, and there's more people being smuggled in the whole of the world today than was done during the slave trade. That's a fact. And what I'm saying is the Home Affairs Department is a crucial department in curbing that horrific thing. And that's why I'm asking the question. How's the situation at Boat Bridge and the city where we heard then that Pakistani people coming to the city, the papers and stuff aren't, we can't trust the city papers. So the people go to the city and simply enter there. Has that situation been rectified? What has been done? You said yourself that people come into the country through a hole in the defense. But the transit visa has changed that. I will tell you now, the transit visa will not change the people with ill and criminal intent. They will still fly and land and walk through the whole innocence. They will still come and do their criminal activities here. They will still do organized crime in this country. I am very, very concerned. But that you say, Nigeria and China and India, or specifically China and India, has got a policy that say they export their people, and we've got this extended visa arrangement that we give to them. It's pertaining to me, and I will surely follow this up with parliamentary questions, and I think people need to know this is what's happening now. Only people in our country don't have work. And we are now opening the way for people to come here, do crime, do whatever they want in our country, and we're making it easier for them. That is what I see. And also what we saw that day when we visited the port, when we went to Cape Town International Airport. The way the airport was designed, and I did raise this issue then, and I was told, some of the officials were told not to speak to me. I still got their names and numbers. I raised the issue then that the placement of the immigration officers and the booths makes it impossible for those highly skilled individuals to do the assessment they were trained to do. People can simply walk through with anything and with any person and fly out of this country and go unchecked. I did raise it then. I want to know whether that was rectified because I haven't flown internationally since that visit. Thank you very much. The rest I will reserve for parliamentary questions.
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Kumbo. Thanks, Chair. Part of the presentation by Home Affairs related to the issue of the visas. It has been identified by the tourism industry as one of the challenges that they face, and that it is not that easy or efficient to get a visa. Obviously, I can read what's on the presentation before us, which is really what was read out. What I'd like to know is there a position paper or a document or some kind of easy to understand expose from the Home Affairs Department exactly as what the problems are and what they're actually doing to solve the problem about getting visas and the time frames involved. no doubt Mr. Mackay could actually answer that question, but it would be helpful if we had something a little bit more comprehensive, which I don't actually rush and write down. So what I'm really asking for is some kind of document that they have prepared identifying what the problem is, how they intend to solve it, and what the time frames are involved. So I'd like to know if that's available. And then for the Department of Tourism, I find these tourism statistics very difficult to understand, and I'm really referring to the last two pages of our tourism spend. I mean, maybe I've misunderstood this, but it says that the average amount that a tourist from the United States spends is 13,400 rand, and then from Angola, 21,600. I mean, 13,000 rand is, you know, less than 2,000. I find it very hard to understand how an American tourist can spend less than $2,000 and is in fact spending only two-thirds of what an average Angolan tourist is spending. That's what the figures tell us. And if you look at Australia, France, Germany, Netherlands, and the United Kingdom, they're all spending about half of what the average Angolan spends. I mean, is that actually correct, that the Angolans, okay, you're nodding, but then, so it's been confirmed that it is correct, but I'd like to understand why that is, because one then looks at countries like Botswana and Kenya, and it is less than what we're spending in North America and Europe when those particular inbound tourists come. So what are the reasons for so much money being spent by Angolans compared to North Americans and Europeans? If I could, yeah, I think that's the question I'd like to ask on that presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. I just got muddled up by these buttons in front of me. Jefferson, I am covered by the previous speaker, especially the first speaker from the opposition. I want to reiterate how disturbing it is that we saw what we saw when we did oversight. And we were wondering what was happening during the Free for All 2010 World Cup period and what the situation might be right now. It really is the situation was so bad that we really would like to go back to see if what is presented here is indeed effected, because it's difficult to imagine that this problem had been curbed maybe by the measures that were taken during the World Cup. But when you see even now how the communication is going on between Lesotho and here, Zimbabwe and here, you wonder as well as what you have reflected on about the foreign nationals that are working in our outlets, business outlets. It requires, I think, it requires us to really look very, very closely on what Home Affairs has presented, because it is not creating only a problem on the economy of the country, but as well it impacts very badly on the xenophobic attitudes that we are faced with. Instead of the economy growing, we've got a lot of horrific deaths that we hear about, and maybe these jealousies and inconveniences are caused by the looseness at our borders. I really would like us to look very seriously on that, because we may have this xenophobic problem becoming rife and becoming worse every day, thinking that people are coming here to steal women, to steal this. It is because the environment or the borders are conducive to that kind of infiltration. So may we therefore make it a point that conditions allowing, may we go back to find out on all these loose ends and see if they have indeed been tightened, and help towards these horrific, criminal activities that we hear about. Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, also, I wanted to find out, they are talking of engaging business partners all over in these areas. How are those business partners engaged? Is it a tender, or is it just ordinary pointing out people to help? How are those people engaged? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks.
Mom,
yeah, thank you, Chair Person. I think on the question of us as South African citizens being protected against some of these corrupt practices, I would also like to support the previous speakers on that one. It's very important that while you are being nice and friendly and considerate to friendships, creating friendships internationally, but at the same time, I think the department of concern, particularly a department like Home Affairs, you also need to protect us. Now, my specific question. When I read an earlier, I listened to an earlier presentation on slide 17 about the wavering of visas for certain countries. The question I had in mind is, but which are these countries? So later on, you presented us with a list of the countries. for which the visas are waived. But now, I look at your list and I say to myself, to me, it's very conspicuous that certain areas are not included at all. I'm seeing in particular, I might be contradicting myself with what I said earlier on, I'm not sure. But I noticed that you don't have any Arab countries for which you have waivers and visas. I'm not sure. Is there a problem? I'm asking that because, again, on this second document that was presented, countries like Bahrain, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia are regarded there as being of strategic importance. In other words, we recognize them when it comes to economic importance. But now one doesn't see any Arab countries at all where there's the possibility to waive a visa. Now the second point here is about the training of the officials to be able to detect fraudulent documents. I think this is very important and we hope that really there will be an improvement in identifying fraudulent documents. But I'm more concerned about what I read in one of the newspapers, I think recently, I think over the weekend, where a Ghanaian citizen had been arrested because this Ghanaian citizen had equipment, and he has equipment to produce almost any of these documents we are talking about here. He can produce passports, he can produce visas, he can produce IDs, name it, driving licenses and so on. But here we are talking to Home Affairs, but we are also affected by the activities of people like this. And it's been going on for some time. Now, I'm just wondering, training these officials, will we be able, for instance, to identify the very problem that is happening right here on our soil, to be able to identify such documents that have been produced in the back door, through the back door? This may not be the only case, there may be others. But why is it that we are not able to identify these documents and they are being used and they are used effectively by those who have managed to obtain such a fraudulent document from such people? Of course, we are fortunate with this one because the case has been discovered and the fellow has been arrested. But how many of those documents have we produced up to this day? How many people are moving around in our country with fraudulent IDs, fraudulent passports, or maybe even fraudulent visas, either to enter South Africa or other countries, I don't know. But this seems to be going on. Now also, I thought it would have been a very useful if, for instance, the narrative, which is, I must say, quite detailed, really, and very informative. I acknowledge that. But I think it would have been useful in some instances to give us some kind of statistics, some examples of how effective some of the measures that we have taken to correct some of these fraudulent activities. To say, for instance, we discovered so many, we have caught up so many, and so on and so forth. You see, it gives us an idea of how serious the problem is, you see. But the narrative is just a narrative. It's not telling us what you yourself have discovered. It is telling us, right enough, what you have yourself have done, what measures you have put in order to correct some of these wrongs, some of these transgressions. But you are not giving us information to say so many have been discovered, so many have been identified. Chairperson, I'm not sure if this question fits in here, but it is of interest to me. It might seem local, but I'm sure it's probably happening elsewhere. You know, we know of the program that the Department of Home Affairs had to register I think we started with the Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. Yes, so that they can produce that in South Africa. You know, I live in Sarajevo, it's a small farm town. Just now, the information I have is that there are quite a number of some of these people who are running helter-skelter, trying to escape the police who are looking out for them because they did not register. Now, my question is, how are you going to discover those who have not registered? Sarajevo may be a small town, there may be a few there, but there may be others elsewhere in the country. Which to me shows that the program is not yet complete. You have not registered them, and they have not gone back to their countries. They are still out in our country here, living, shall we say, illegally. What are we going to do about that? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Yeah, and if perhaps we can just focus a bit on the presentation as well. The presentation by Department of Home Affairs on plans to support industry in South Africa. But it's also tempting to look at security issues. And I think everyone shares those feelings against organized crime and illegal immigration and so forth. And then that has got to be addressed, but the primary area would be the on the issue to support the tourism industry. But I think as a country also, everyone has security fears at some stage. I mean our fears have to be addressed. But having said that, some of these issues, like let me just quote the case of my constituency. My constituency is next to the Swaziland border. People just cross the fence, and then they use a South African hospital. There's no one from South Africa using a Swaziland hospital, but there are people from Swaziland who cross and use South African hospitals and schools, and are getting pension and all those things. And locals are concerned. They talk about these things, and they don't like it. But now the soldiers on the border and the police allow them, and some kids are just bullying. I'm not saying that problem should just be stopped at one go, but I think at some stage you've got to have a plan as neighbors to stop this thing. We cannot pay tax for an indefinite amount of people, because that is what it means. You won't be knowing. You know, you'll be having revenue, but you'll be supporting the whole of Africa. We cannot afford that. I mean, that is not why we are paying tax. And everyone has to understand that. And we may be generous, but at a certain stage, it's a numbers game. You collect your tax to look after a certain number of people. But it's not the fault of the Department of Home Affairs. Sometimes it's just our lapse on security. Sometimes it's, I don't know, but it's a number of factors. It's not solely the issue of the Department of Home Affairs. And then on issues pertaining to tourism, the responses then are going to be from Dr. Karaha, and then the issues on Department of Home Affairs, the responses are going to be from Mr. McKay. So over to you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, for the questions. Firstly, Chairperson, I remember well the visits that we undertook to all our ports of entry, because I was there for most of them. And I think in those meetings it was clear that border control is not only the responsibility of Home Affairs. Because when you got there, you saw the old BCOCC departments that were there. Home Affairs is responsible for granting documents to people and for checking documents who arrive at the port of entry to come into the country. Those responsible for the borderline security is the Department of Defense. So if anyone comes through a hole in the fence, the Department of Defense should be seeing that there are no holes in the fence. It's not a Home Affairs responsibility, Chairperson. Organ trafficking, it's a customs responsibility, goods and everything, because I haven't seen or heard of the case of someone carrying a head on its his or her left, members here. But surely what Home Affairs also doesn't do is, we don't go check the boots of cars. We don't check what is in the cars. It is a customs and police function. That is why they are at the port of entry. There are different departments at a port of entry. It's the police that does that function of seeing that that the place is secure, that no illicit activities take place in the port of entry, and also to make sure that the cargo and goods that are in the cars are not illicit goods. They are also there to look at, honorable members, that no contraband goods are in the cars and being taken in and out of the country. Customs is there to look at similar things like contraband goods, that goes in and out, and the taxation thereof. Then we have the Department of Agriculture that looks at issues of foot and mouth disease, and also that rare plants and stuff do not go in and out of the country. Then we have the Department of Health that looks at issues of communicable disease. So there's a host of organizations and government departments involved in port control. Please take note, port control. The borderline and the border fence is the responsibility of the Department of Defense. So, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, if we see 100 meters from the border post people going in and out of the country, those issues we raise, and it is raised within the BCOCC context, and it is the responsibility of Department of Defense to see that that does not happen. Chairperson, on the issues with regard to the transit visa, that it is not a deterrent, we think it is the deterrent. And Honorable Njobe, indeed, your observations are correct. We should have brought statistics so that we at least have some quantify some of our assertions that we have there. As I have said, we have seen that the trend of people coming into South Africa from those countries I have mentioned has changed, in that they are now flying into Nairobi and using other routes rather than them coming into South Africa. And if you also have a look at statistics from the SAA and other airlines flying from those destinations, you will see that there is a drop in number of passengers transiting through South Africa. So those are clear indications that it is. It is not a complete deterrent, because all that you do is in human smuggling and people smuggling and trafficking, you just use another route, for instance. And there's a whole range of interventions that you should take and be on the lookout always to see that you have the correct, that you know what they are doing, for knowledge in terms of what the new routes are, so that you can counter it. Chairperson, those immigrants from Nigeria, Chinese, the Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, that we are making it easier for them by granting them long-term visas. I do not agree to that, Chairperson. Firstly, I had thought that the portfolio committee would be interested to see what is it that we do as the Department of Home Affairs to facilitate the movement of bona fide visitors to South Africa. And indeed, Chairperson, as you have rightly said, what these specific actions, what have we done in terms of the President's speech? As the Department of Home Affairs, We have also said to the chair, to the portfolio committee, that we are trying to balance the need for security and for facilitation of people to come into the country, because no country can survive without foreigners, if I can say that. No country. There are skills that they are bringing. There are not only skills, but just cultural benefits. There's a whole lot of benefits that exchange of nationalities do, or migration or immigration does. And it is important, Chairperson, that we accentuate those. Because if we don't, it will be seen as if we are very xenophobic as South Africans, and I don't believe that we are. But we need to keep that balance. Chairperson, if I may venture, I think the fears that the honourable members have is a fear that is shared by the Department of Home Affairs, in that the processes and procedures for letting people into the country may have been too lax, and we need to fix that. I would venture to say, Chairperson, that pre the advent of our democracy in the apartheid South Africa, we had the pendulum right on the one side, where we had a closed society, minimal movement through our ports of entry. It was designed, immigration was designed to keep people out, rather than facilitating the movement, and accept the facilitation of movement of some nationalities from Europe and from the then Eastern Europe countries, for instance. With the advent of our democracy, Chairperson, it seems as if the pendulum has swung to the other extreme, where we are now wide open. People can just stream into the country, come into the country, do what they want into the country. And what we are doing now as the Department of Home Affairs, Chairperson, and you will see in the measures that we are taking, of which this race-based immigration methodology is one of them, is to bring a balance, to swing that pendulum back to the middle, where we have a balanced immigration system that manages risks, but minimizes the risk to the country. So we maximize the benefit, basically, where we are saying that people that are okay, people that are fine, bona fide visitors are welcome to South Africa, and indeed they are, and they should be welcome to South Africa. But those that with ill intent we will keep out, and they are not welcome in South Africa. And that is what our methodology, which I have explained, gone to explain to the honourable members, intends to do. With regard to the issues of the borderline, I cannot answer for that, and maybe the portfolio committee can call in the Department of Defence, can call in the other departments to find out what role they are playing and what exactly they are doing at our ports of entry, and maybe the portfolio committee would then be led by what initiative they are bringing about. Chairperson, with regard to Mr. Kumbok's, Honorable Kumbok's question, I didn't understand it. He says, is there a position paper on what problems are, and is it available? I don't know what he's referring to and what position paper is it. Maybe if he could be more specific, I would be able to answer it. But I don't know if you can have a position paper in a void. If you do not, I'm not sure really what the issues are. If maybe I can be led, I will be able to respond to it, Honorable Chairperson. With regard to the engagement of business partners, Chairperson, indeed, we are following PFMA prescripts here. The companies have tendered and have gone through the whole tender process. It's not just identifying people and saying that this is what you are now, our business partner. It is a tender process that we have gone through, and one particular company had won that tender for these four countries that I've spoken about. Honorable Njobe, indeed, the Arab countries, and just before we came into the meeting, I had a discussion with Dr. Tarafi, and I said to him, I see these countries on your list, and in fact, I told him that we are in the process of negotiating visa waivers with these countries. But it was all stopped with the current situation in the Arab world. Like Oman, we were close to signing.
Only
recent. Yes, it is. You are correct. It is only recent, honorable member. It is because we have only started the discussions with these countries recently. It started at the end of last year, the last quarter of last year, and the beginning of this year that we started negotiating with Oman, with Bahrain, with Egypt in terms of relaxing the visa requirements with them. We were at an advanced point with Oman, but they are not coming back to us in terms of when we can sign the visa waivers and so on. So we are still awaiting for them to come back to us to be able to move on these countries. But indeed, it is a priority for the department as well. Chairperson, and I'm going to link it to specific actions which I thought the Portfolio Committee would be interested in, because the interest of the Portfolio Committee is to see that as Home Affairs we are not a stumbling block in visitors coming to this country. I think that is the most important thing. And we have done quite a lot of things, Chairperson. Firstly, the visa waivers are one of them. We have, as you can see on the list, we are continuously engaging on countries which we think are not a risk to our national security to get visa, to engage them on visa waivers, because it would assist in nationals moving to South Africa for visit purposes. Also, we will be led by the Department of Tourism in terms of where their markets are now and where they see they need to increase their market footprint, as well as potential markets that they see that they could exploit for visitors or for tourists to come into the country. And jointly, we would then have a look at what is it that we can do to see that we relax these, as the President has said, relax these visa requirements that are needed for people coming into the country. Because if you have stiff requirements, a lot of people would not qualify to come into the country at all. And our tourism industry, of course, would go down. And this is a big market. If it generates $2 billion, and I'm sure they would want to grow it to more than that, we have a crucial role to play as the Department of Home Affairs. But again, Chairperson, we need to manage to balance security and facilitation of people into South Africa. That's why, for me, it was important for us to bring this methodology that we are using now in terms of risk basing it, to make sure that we get the right people into South Africa, so that we do not hamper people coming into South Africa for tourist purposes. With regard to what we thought we would also do, and what is important, Chairperson, is for frequent travelers, especially from those countries that we are saying we cannot have visa waivers because of national security concerns, where we are saying we will grant them long-term visas and multiple entry visas because they are frequent travelers. It's not just to anyone, Chairperson. These are people that have a track record of visiting South Africa and leaving South Africa during the period that they said they're going to come here. People that have not overstayed in the country, people that have a good track record of visiting the country, doing their business, and leaving for home again. They are what we call frequent travelers, and they are bona fide travelers coming to South Africa, normally businessmen, and or business people, sorry, and people coming to visit for other reasons as well, but on a frequent basis. So these are people that have been checked. We are sure that they do not come into the country willy-nilly or overstay when they arrive here. So when we talk about a long-term multiple entry visa, it is not making it easier for them to come into the country. Indeed, it is making it easier for them to come into the country, but we are sure that they are bona fide visitors coming into the country and that they do their business and they leave when they should leave. And normally, they do not have that problem of overstaying or involved in other criminal activities in South Africa. Chairperson, I would also share with the committee, the esteemed committee, that we are in the process of reviewing our immigration policy, as you know. And this review of our immigration policy is going to look at all of the requirements of our visas and permits that we currently have. One of the stated objectives of government is to bring in skills, critical skills into the country, whilst we do not have those skills in the country. It is also on my minister's performance agreement with the president that she would facilitate the movement of critical skills and scarce skills into the country, as determined by the Department of Higher Education and the Department of Economic Development. Now, to be able to do that, you would need to be competitive internationally, because these skills that we are looking for as a country, we are not the only country looking for them. The rest of the world out there is also looking for similar skills or skill sets. Now, what then will give South Africa the edge that people would rather work in South Africa rather than in the UK or rather than in Nigeria or rather in Australia or any other country that needs that wants the same skills? So because of that, we are reviewing our policy to see how we can make it more attractive or incentivize the flow of these much-needed skills into the country, whilst Chairperson balancing these national security issues with facilitation of movement into the country. Critical for us as the department, and we are in the process of reviewing and looking at our immigration policy. So, Chairperson, when it comes to what specific actions we have done, those are the specific actions which I thought would be valuable to this portfolio committee, because the portfolio committee is in the business of seeing how do we get more tourism into the country, but also that how do we balance, as come out from the committee members, this security issue of people just seeming to come into the country and balancing it with facilitation of those that we need into the country. Chairperson, I have one or two more to answer, if I may. The issue of the person that was arrested, Honorable Mjove, sorry, indeed, he was actually from Uganda. It is a Ugandan, Ugandan national. Yes, Honorable Mjove. He was arrested with a whole lot of machine making fraudulent documentation at his home. And I think over the past year, we've busted about three or four such what they call mini factories or mini home affairs, unofficial home affairs. These documents, indeed, you can pick up that they are fraudulent documents. And that is why there is this currently our civics department within home affairs has a project or a pilot project running with the banks where they can do online verification of people coming into the bank, opening up accounts and so on. It is indeed trying to counter this fraudulent or identity theft, as we call it, what they would do, and we hope to roll that out soon, is that at the banks we will have a live capture of live verification systems where people would be able to put their fingerprints. It reads against Home Affairs database, and it would indicate whether you are South African or not, or the bearer of that particular document. Because identity theft is really costing us as the country a lot of money in fraudulent activities and so on. So we think that initiative with the South African banks would help to bring that down as well. With regard, Chairperson, with the, I think this is the final one, with the registration of Zimbabweans, indeed we were able to get just over 250,000 applications from Zimbabwe. And we are in the process of completing that project. As soon as they receive their passports from Zimbabwe, we are able to issue them with the permits that they had applied for. But there are Zimbabweans that are still coming into the country, for instance, after that process. Currently, there is a moratorium on the deportation of Zimbabweans. As soon as that moratorium is lifted on the deportation of Zimbabweans, indeed, the department will, where we detect or come across Zimbabweans that are illegal, not only Zimbabweans, any person that is illegal in the country, he or she will be arrested and deported back to Zimbabwe, so that we deter the people overstaying in our country currently. So we will indeed, as soon as the visa or the moratorium is lifted, continue with the deportation of Zimbabweans. There is a moratorium on the deportation, except, of course, those that have been jailed in South Africa and have served sentences, those we are deporting to back to Zimbabwe. Sorry, Chairperson, I think lastly and related to the issue of the people in the hospitality industry, in the hotels, in the restaurants,
the common skills, not the scarce skills.
Yeah, the common skills. We would need to look with the department, and we are busy with discussions with other departments on this issue, with the Department of Labor in particular, where we are asking, are there certain jobs, for instance, that South Africans don't want to do? We are not sure. But it seems as if there are certain sectors of our economy where we find foreigners doing that work rather than very few South Africans doing it. It is also, Honorable Chairperson, an international trend, for instance. You would find in certain countries there are certain jobs that are just done by the expatriate or expatriates in those countries. They're not done by the nationals of that particular country. But indeed, there are a lot of them in that industry. And Chairperson, this is, I think it is facilitated currently what's the word I want? I'm sorry, I'm just trying to use the correct words, Chairperson. Inadvertently, in some way, by our asylum seeker process, Chairperson. Our asylum seeker process, and what the courts had foisted down on the department is of particular note here. Asylum seekers that come into the country that apply for asylum, anyone that comes and says, I apply for asylum, that person's case needs to be listened to. And what happens is they are then issued with a Section 22 permit as per the Refugee Act. And this asylum seeker permit is endorsed with a right to work and study in South Africa, which the court decided we need to do, because the court said that we cannot allow people to come into the country and whilst they are awaiting their claims for asylum, not be able to sustain themselves. So whilst they are in the country awaiting the outcome of the claim, we would need to give them the right to work and to study. It was based on a court case that went to the High Court, the High Court at that particular time. I cannot now, Honourable Chairperson, remember the name to the case. I hope it comes back to me. But that is what the court decided. And since then, all of these permits that are issued to asylum seekers in the country give them the right to work and to study in the country, which makes them then marketable for people in these sectors to employ them in these sectors. The whole exercise of reviewing our immigration policy and our refugee policy, we are also looking at this particular issue, and we are very near on making announcements in terms of how we are going to move forward with regards to the asylum seeker process in South Africa. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Before Taraka responds, let me ask Honorable Kumbok to come with the first part of his question,
yes,
which was not clear. The second one was clear. It was questioning the validity of the statistics.
Thanks, Charles Kwachi. Page 16 of the presentation, South Africa regulates the entry of foreign visitors. Foreigners are required to apply for permission from the South African government to enter or visit the Republic of South Africa. In a few more words, done through a visa and permit application regime which adjudicates applications and issues the necessary visas. That's from this partner's presentation, not my words. The tourism industry currently has a problem, or they've articulated that, with the time it takes to get visas from many countries of origin. And if the word position paper is not acceptable, then can I ask, is there a plan? Is there a plan which says, this is the problem, this is how we're going to fix it, this is how long it's going to take? Because we are here as a tourism committee, not as a home affairs committee, and we have to make sure that the tourism industry and businesses in the industry operate the best possible efficiency in the interest of our country. And if they are expressing that there's a problem with visas and it's holding back tourism growth and job creation, then we have to raise these issues. So whatever you want to call it, I just want to know from the Department of Home Affairs, what are the details, what has been done to fix the problem, and how long is it going to take? I think it's a fairly simple question.
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't understand that question because it was not put in that particular way, Chair, and I would be able to respond to it now, Chairperson. Firstly, I am not sure where does that come from, and it hasn't been raised with the Department of Home Affairs. In our turnaround time for a visa application is 5 days, as we said, Chairperson. Where those 5 days are not being met, and we know in which area it's not being met or which of our missions abroad are not giving that turnaround, we would like to know so that we can intervene on that particular issue, Chairperson. But on the issue of tourist visas or visitor visas, it is our lowest risk visa because it's people coming in for tourist purposes. And it is issued within the time frame of 5 days. Where it takes longer, Chairperson, it would be when things don't check out. As I had said, in terms of our methodology, maybe someone doesn't have all the documentation that he has applied for, doesn't have a return ticket to his country, did not pay the repatriation deposit or things like that. That is when it would take longer and the client would be engaged so that he or she can give the necessary documentation that's needed or outstanding. But the turnaround time is 5 days, and we don't have any problems as I can see currently on issuing visas for tourist purposes at our foreign missions chairperson. The permits currently that we are issuing by the department, work permits, study permits, a company spouse permit, all the other immigration permits, we are on record as a department where we have gone and said that we have a backlog on this, and we even had a backlog project which we reported about 3 months ago that backlog has been eradicated or dealt with in terms of those types of permits. But those are not permits that the tourism, for instance, or relates to tourism. These are work permits, study permits, company spouse permits, medical treatment permits. There are all the other permits that people apply for to come into the country for various reasons that they come in. But the tourist visa, Honorable Chairperson, is issued on average within 5 days. If there are certain countries that do have problems, please, I would gladly take this issue up with the honorable members and see to it that I investigate it and come back to answer why that is not happening in certain countries. We are not aware of that.
Okay, in fact, then I think that interaction should continue, and then that door should be left this thing open, and then we see how to take it further.
I personally deal with such issues. I mean, I deal with tourism with this day. If it happens, tourism would phone me. Mr. Tareke called me and said, McKay, we have a problem in Mozambique. Chinese visiting, can you guys please see that you issue them with visas to enter South Africa? And then I would go back to them and say, fine, it can be done. Or I would go back to them and say, no, Victor, I cannot issue because these people were refused visas initially by our mission back in China, and now they travel to Mozambique and try to apply there for visas, hoping that they will get a visa to come into the country there. So those cases we investigate, and I always deal with it personally, even Chairperson, I deal with such cases. So I would really welcome it. If it is raised with me, I will intervene.
No, thanks. I think that relationship is good.
Chairperson, I ask for an opportunity to respond to some of the issues that Mr. McKay raised. I really, it's urgent that I do.
No. In fact, they have not finished responding.
No, but Mr. McKay has finished responding, and Mr. Crumbuck had an opportunity to clear a question.
No, it was a question of which was not understood. Let us go to Dr. Tarafe, and thereafter you'll be the first.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question was with regards to the Angolians and their spending patterns from Honorable Kumbuk. Indeed, the Angolians are big spenders, very big spenders. A typical visitor that we get from Angola comes here and stays at the Michelangelo's in Sandton. And they go and dine at the butchers downstairs in the same place. They buy suits. They buy, you know, the sharp nose shoes. They spend real big money. So when you take, for instance, a comparison of that particular spender with a British tourist, we do have a certain number of British tourists that do have friends and relatives here. We do have a number of, I mean, a British consumer is highly conscious. They count every cent that they've spent to know exactly I've spent on this and really whether it was worth it or it wasn't worth it and so on and so forth. And they really don't come here to buy those certain things and so on. So the competition we have for Angola market is Brazil and Portugal. We are saying the proximity is quite good. If we increase the frequencies and we've got more capacity, we definitely will get a lot more of that money down here. It's oil money. There's oil in Angola. So there is quite a lot of money that they actually spend here. All of which I haven't received my PhD yet.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. As a member of Parliament, duly elected by the people in the Northwest Province and representing them, as well as the constituency of Potchefstroom and Ventersdorp, I feel very offended that I'm dictated to what I can and cannot ask after a presentation. I will not be told by any person that I can only ask about tourism-related issues, if in fact security and risk is one of the main factors in a presentation, and if I am aware of problems with regard to home affairs. I will not be dictated to by an official or anyone for that matter. Secondly, I am fully aware of the fact that there are several parties in the BCOCC, but I'm aware of the fact, and Mr. McKay knows that I'm aware of that fact. But you cannot simply say there's a hole in the fence. It's a problem of the fence. Because the moment that person is in South Africa, it becomes the problem of the Home Affairs Department and also, might I add, the problem of the taxpayer. We have paid for that person to get back to his country. It's not done by money from heaven or some manner or something. It's paid for by the taxpayer. So the leaders of the taxpayer and the members of the public that I represent, I want an answer. And I don't want to be told what I can and cannot ask. I will, in fact, ask anything. I just want that to be clear, especially if it relates to where I come from and my experience as a member of parliament. Secondly, to say that it's the police's problem, if someone, that it's not Home Affairs that's supposed to check the boots. Sure, it's not Home Affairs' problem, but if there's a person or persons in the boot and they are in the country illegally, it becomes your problem, Mr. McKay, and it becomes our collective problem and our collective responsibility. Furthermore, to then insinuate, after I explicitly stated that I'm not xenophobic but I've got certain concerns, to then say we should facilitate things and facilitate people and accommodate people from other cultures. I find that completely, I find it an insult. I don't know what you were trying to do by insinuating that I was acting xenophobic, in a xenophobic manner. I find that insulting. I'm a liberal Democrat. I'm not racist. I'm not xenophobic. Please withdraw that.
Thank you very much, Dalia. And I think in what you said, Mr. Talia, you were supported by many, many people. And then in the answer, I think it was answering many, many people, not only you. In as far as these people getting into South Africa and so forth and so forth. And then we are aware that these things in South Africa are called xenophobic sometimes, but in some instances it's because of the intensity and the numbers of people that flock in. It's not the principle of hating people from outside, but once people get swamped by foreigners and then they are not aware that the government is doing anything, then perhaps they may perceive that they have to deal with the situation themselves, and then it becomes then xenophobia. And then, if you have been offended in any way, I'll be the first to apologize. And then, if there are
missing statements that offended you. I think let Mr. McKay explain himself, and withdraw and apologize, and we do really apologize.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson. Firstly, Chairperson, I am an official that has been called by the Portfolio Committee responsible for tourism, whom I respect, this committee and the members therein. I came to do a presentation by what I was asked to do, and I did it. There were questions based on that. My responses were never meant to offend anyone, Chairperson. It was not meant to offend anyone. It was not personal either. The issues that I raised where I thought I was answering directly was to Manjobe, where I would say, you raised this issue. The other issues that you say, Chairperson, and Honorable Bok, Kumbok, sorry. So it was not intended to offend anyone, Chairperson. And I am sorry if anyone is offended by the way I answered questions. I just answered the questions to my best of my ability and in a frank manner that I think the Portfolio Committee would have expected to me to be frank on issues and not hide things. So my apologies, Chairperson, if I did indeed offend any of the members of the committee, and my deepest, I'm saying this with my deepest sincerity. And I was not here to insult anyone as well, Chairperson. It's common knowledge, Chairperson, that in the border environment there are more than one department. And indeed, there are some of the responsibilities that certain, or mandates that certain departments have. And I cannot answer to those mandates sitting here or answer on behalf of them, Chairperson. That is why I even asked the chair, or through the chair, that maybe the Portfolio Committee could also ask the other departments to come to clear up some of the other issues that one might have, asking them on these issues. So once again, my apologies if I had insulted anyone or offended anyone in the, specifically the honorable member that raised the issue. It was not my intention at all, Chairperson.
Well, Chairperson, not so much on what is being discussed. I think I've got my other point also to raise, but just to say, you know, the question of the person that I put it as, please protect the citizens of South Africa. Yes, because you see, if we're not protected, then we will get to a point where many of us will be said to be xenophobic, when really we are not. All we're asking for is protection. All countries do it. I have so many examples, but I wouldn't give them here to Mr. Tai. I lived in exile for a very long time. Countries protect their citizens in one way or another, in terms of these migration policies and so practices and so on and so forth. The other example I would have given probably would also be referred to the Trade and Industry Department. You know, the other day we went to Chinatown in Ottery, and briefly, what we noticed there was that, yes, there are so many Chinese goods there that have been brought into the country, but the point is, there isn't a single other nationality who is working there, other than the Chinese people. These are some of the things, but I don't want to go into that. Maybe it would be a problem for the Department of the Trade and Industry. But my point was about...
It's a problem of the Department of Labor. They should be checking that.
Okay, whoever.
They should be checking.
Whoever. Now, my point is, what I wanted to raise the person was on this identity theft problem. You know, I must apologize to have identified the nationality wrongly. I should have been Ghanaian, then Ugandan. Okay, fine. But...
we have exceeded our time. Let us just go and be...
I just wanted to say, Chairperson, you know, in this identity theft business, let's take Home Affairs and leave the other departments, and this particular case, for example. is there no connection between some officials in the department and this person who is practicing what he is practicing? In other words, I'm saying, where does this person get all this material from? How does he know where to get the material from if there is no one from the department who knows how this should be done and where it should be obtained? So I'm then saying to the department, don't you think that it is important when we look at cases like this, we also investigate, we make some internal investigation. We know there have been lots of corrupt practices in the Department of Home Affairs, but we appreciate the fact that many of those have been solved. But we can't say we can solve all of them within a short time, within a few years. So there could still be people in the department itself who are encouraging this kind of thing to happen. So my point is, let us investigate also internally. When a case like this comes out, we don't just leave it to the police, but we also look inside and say to ourselves, isn't there some internal job here? Thank you,
Chairperson. Ma'am Mole, you have the last.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I wanted to say there's no issue on this matter. If we have called the department to discuss on the issue, we must focus on that issue. Because it's true that the questions are not from the Department of Home Affairs. What you can do is I highlighted the matters, and maybe on their meetings where they are jointly department, the DG can maybe talk to other departments. There is this challenge that was raised. But we should focus on what we have called the department for, not just jump to other matters of other departments in the person who is not coming for those issues. And other chairperson, it helps us if we have called the department and we see there is a need on this issue of defense. It's where we can talk to the chairperson, when we discuss with this department, we have seen the need that there is this matter of the fencing and what, where you can call the department of defense to address this matter, not just to the people has come out or do this and this. The answer was correct. The only thing is just maybe the member is offended but he didn't understand that he asked the question that is not related to the matter we are coming from for today.
No, thank you. I think let us try and leave it at that. And perhaps ask for concluding remarks from the Department of Home Affairs and then from the Department of Tourism before then we could conclude. But thanks everyone for the contribution.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the invitation that you have given to the Department of Home Affairs. In fact, it is that invitation to come and address the portfolio committee has also spurred us on in terms of intensifying our relationship as the two departments and to work together on some of these issues or all the issues that are related to us in the department. And we have seen since that. That we have regular meetings, and I could report as well to the House, and I'm sure Vito would do the same, that we are on the verge of signing a memorandum of understanding between our department and the Department of Tourism so that we could, through a memorandum of understanding, deal with most of these issues that concern the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, Chairperson, once again for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, we thank you for the opportunity to come on this day. It was not for us, it was for Home Affairs. But we really appreciate that the members and the Honourable Chairperson have noted the relationship that we are inculcating to ensure that we take the tourism agenda forward. This is going to be a broader relationship which Mr. Maki was talking about, it will include, amongst other issues, statistical connection issues. It then goes to the issues around visas. But it's a much broader relationship that we want to take forward. I'm sure as it unfolds, there will be a lot more information that comes out about some of the specific interventions. But we are actually talking even in the later hours of the day, in some instances facilitating individual travelers that actually raise these issues and say, well, I'm at this particular place and this is in that and that. And we're able to actually then get intervention from their side. And we really thank you quite a lot for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. But before we conclude, I think the issue of the refugee status, people having a right to work permit, I think has got to be re-looked at, and then we should see, because we should see what can be done about it. Perhaps we can raise it in Parliament, we can raise it in other structures, so that it rests. I mean, our own people were exiled, they were refugees by law now. I mean, but they were not allowed to work in those countries. And then if our courts now come back and say now people should have a right, and then how they are going to sustain themselves, I think that one should be belong to welfare or something, but not for them to have a right to work whilst their refugee status is being established or determined. And then the issues on us as different stakeholders in the nation, I think we all have a responsibility to build our nation and make it a stronger nation. We've got to try and make ourselves much more peaceful, much more powerful, and be driven by a purpose. And that purpose should be that the nation should be the greatest nation it can be with the resources, capacity, peace, and everything it does have. Let us be driven by that passion, that patriotism, and then I think we are going to achieve a lot. And we may have our problems, but the main driving force, it should be that South Africa should be the greatest nation ever. With those words, I conclude my this meeting, which I appreciate. Thank you.